Hello and welcome to History Gap. I'm Georgia McAndrew.
And I'm Molly Goodfellow. Quick disclaimer, we are not historians, just two girls with the internet and other resources, so don't come for us.
This week on the podcast, we are talking about a woman of the criminal nature. So Molly, when you picture a pirate, what do you picture exactly?
Usually men, eye patches, jaunty hats, like sweat, rum, facial hair.
Yeah, I was the same.
Scurvy.
Yeah, I was the same. I only really pictured men, as you said, like one eye and a beard. I never really thought about like women pirates before. Like I don't ever really seen like male adaptations.
We get like Keira Knightley.
Yeah, like over-sexualized Keira Knightley.
Corseted.
Yeah.
Cleavage aplenty.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know. They're always like corsets, like boobs.
Busty wenches. Yeah. Busty pirate wenches.
And they look great. But I'm just like, was that happening back in the day? No, it wasn't. However, today we are breaking the male pirate narrative by looking at the life and career of Grace O'Malley, or for our Irish listeners, Gráinne O'Malley, a feared pirate queen who ruled the Irish seas and even caught the attention of Queen Elizabeth herself.
Let's go.
In 1540s West Ireland, County Mayo, a small girl is sneaking onto a sailing boat. Seagulls fly high in the sky. From their view, you can see men busying on the deck, loading the ship with supplies. Standing next to the helm is a feared Irish chieftain who makes his money by pirating on the sea. This man is Owen O'Malley. The O'Malleys at the time were a seafaring family who travelled across oceans to trade, they taxed for fishing in their waters, occasionally plundered, and controlled coastal castles to protect their lands in Western Ireland. Piracy in Ireland has a long history. As far back as 400 AD, Irish pirates carried out raids on British Isles and other travelling boats, looting goods, treasures, and even slaves. Now, life as a pirate on the Atlantic Ocean, which lies to the west of Ireland, was not an easy one. The water was cruel and cold, and it's estimated that if you fell into the Atlantic Ocean, you'd survive for around 15 minutes at most before perishing to the freezing water. But pirates didn't only have to worry about the sea. The work itself was laborious, dangerous, and violent. However, it was rumoured that Chief Owen was as tough as the sea that he sailed on. As the men continue to ready the ship, the young girl hides amongst the ropes with a dream of being at sea with her dad, Owen O'Malley. That sea, though, was not a welcoming place for women. In fact, since humans learned to sail, superstitions and myth have surrounded women and the ocean, creating rules and stereotypes. I basically did some research on laws that existed around women and the sea.
Yeah.
And some of it was quite mental.
Great. It sounds like the sort of thing where someone would say, oh, women aren't allowed to go on ships in case, like, if you're on your period and you're a woman, you're not allowed to go out to sea. That sounds like the sort of thing you're about to tell me.
Basically, in summary. historically, it was believed that women brought bad luck and could cause the ship to sink, and therefore were often excluded from any maritime activity, including occupations and travelling at sea. So if you're a woman who wanted to get on a boat,
they're like, you're going to cause some sort of mischief.
Yeah, it's all going to go wrong if you're on here. Some mariners also thought that the presence of women would anger the water gods, causing violent storms and shipwrecks. Classic. There was also the worry that women on board would distract sailors from their duties. Yep. And the reality was that women could face sexual assault on voyages. But obviously, it would be their fault for distracting.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, this sounds like valid and I totally believe this. But like, the idea that you would ban the women and not the rapey men is
worrying.
I feel like it's a topic that comes up in occupations now, so I don't know why we're surprised.
I know, but literally. And it might surprise you to know that generally, seafaring professions were barred to women until the 20th century, and it wasn't until 1990 that the British Royal Navy allowed women onto boats, which is mental.
That is so...
I was only born 7 years after
I was born 3 years after that.
That's crazy.
Do you think it was like residual anger about Rose Dawson on the Titanic killing Leonardo DiCaprio?
Yeah, putting that diamond back.
Yeah, they're like, last time we had a woman on this boat,
it didn't go up.
It didn't go up. Never again.
I guess it was probably like that whole thing where
it's a lot of paperwork. It sounds like
a lot of paperwork. If it's gonna like upset the other like male sailors on board and things, but it's just like kind of mental how like long superstitions like existed. And obviously, like sirens, like mermaids, they were like a massive thing as well. And it just sounds like men are a bit scared of women.
Yeah, that, I mean, that tracks, I think. And I think also it's a thing of, even though originally the idea behind these sorts of laws would have been based in superstition, that's kind of not got any sort of basis, because it's so like deeply ingrained, that kind of law gets forgotten. And then it's kind of a thing of, no one quite knows why that's the rules, but that's what the rules are. And it's so hard to change those sorts of rules, even when they should be.
No, totally. And that's probably why it was around until 1990.
Yeah.
Do you think you would have gone on a boat back in the day with all these rules?
I mean, they probably wouldn't have let me.
Yeah.
I feel like I would have I feel like I wouldn't have cared until someone told me that I couldn't. And then I would be like, all I want to do is get on that boat.
Yeah. Which is basically what happened to Grace. So Legend. We'll get back into it. So as 11-year-old Grace O'Malley hid among the ropes of her father's boat, it was all these beliefs that she was up against. Now, as the boat pulls out of the harbour, Chief Owen notices some movement in the spare ropes and immediately spots Grace. Both amused and frustrated, he yanks Grace from the deck and explains to her that the sea is no place for a girl. He jests,
"How can you sail the seas with hair as long as that? It will get stuck in the very ropes you hide in."
It is reported in Irish folklore that Grace grabs her father's knife from his belt and tears at her hair, cutting it short like a boy, gaining her the nickname Gronya Whale, which is very literally translated to Bald Grace. The most brutal and upright, upfront nickname. Now, hair in terms of women's history was a symbol of virility, youth and femininity. So by cutting her hair, Grace had done what many women had been forced to do before, cut their hair so they were either safe at sea or so they would be accepted at sea. With her new short haircut, Chief Owen O'Malley agrees to let his daughter sail with him, and so begins her life on the sea. From age 11, she is taught the ways of the ocean, about its tides, currents, and how to navigate by star and by compass.
I find it mad as well also that like he was very much like, no, Grace, you can't be on this boat. We're not having it. And all she has to do is cut off her hair. And then he's like, you got me there, Grace. Yeah. Fair play. Let's go.
Yeah. All these worries like, I had about you being at sea.
Yeah. Not like the massive choppy waters or like dangerous adversaries. Mm. It's like, oh no, your hair might get caught up in the ropes.
Yeah. Like, I know. It's really odd.
Wild.
It is. I kind of said to you before we started recording the podcast, I was like, I feel like this aspect of Grace's life could be like really romanticized. Like she's on the ocean. She's 11 years old. Like she's cut her hair short. She's living her best life with her dad. But I'm like, he's also putting her in like grave danger.
Yeah. Also, not to like, obviously, how do I word this without sounding anti-feminist? But like, where's her mum in all this?
I know.
Where's the mother?
Yeah, where is she? Why is she like, no, hon?
Thought of my mum letting my dad take me by myself across the seven seas to live a pirate life.
Yeah. But maybe like he was like, yeah, I'm a cool dad.
Bring your daughter to work day. Yeah. It so happens that work is piracy.
Yeah. So Grace has begun her career as a pirate. It's important to note that not all pirates were plank-walking fiends. Some people were forced into piracy due to poverty or circumstance. However, in the case of Grace, she really was the plank-walking type. And we know and love her for it, basically.
Good for her.
Yeah.
I support it.
Yeah. And after learning the ways of the sea throughout her teens, the patriarchy did unfortunately catch up a little bit with Grace, and she was married off, basically, tales old as time in women's history, unfortunately, to an Irish chieftain called Donal O'Flaherty?
Yeah.
So, however, like piracy, Grace kind of saw an opportunity. So knowing the dangers of the time, Grace kind of agreed to marry him, basically hoping that it wouldn't take too long for the ocean to kill him off. Romance is not dead in this.
I was going to say, it's like interesting that she's not, because I imagine like for a lot of girls back in those times, being married is the thing that you're kind of set up to do. Mm. And so the idea that she's probably, if she's grown up with her dad in the way, I can't imagine he being a pirate, it's his dream for his little girl to get married in the same way.
That's what I like do find quite interesting about her story, is that there are in some ways, like she was quite conventional, or her family was. and other ways that there wasn't. Like, she was obviously this teenage girl pretending to be a boy on the sea.
Yeah.
And then, she, like, 16 comes along. Her dad's like, it's time. Let's marry you off. So Grace goes on to bear this man 3 children. And not long after the 3rd, Grace's manifesting came true because he did actually die.
Oh no.
Yeah. So Donal was murdered by members of a rival clan in 1560. So O'Malley took charge of her late husband's lands and his ships.
It's the last thing you expect when you become a pirate. to be killed off by rival pirates.
We can't know for sure that this was her plan, but I do feel like, just kind of knowing her already and like knowing the rest of her story, that she was definitely like, I can do it. I can marry you. I can deal with this.
And like, I can give him 3 kids, but I have been like, I have been manifesting through all 3 of these pregnancies that you will die. And now it has happened.
You will die a horrible violet death and I will have all of your castles. So yeah, she's got all the lands, all the ships.
Good for her.
Yep. So the Joyces, who was the clan believed to be responsible for Donald's death, thought this castle would be open to capture with no one to protect it. What they had not expected was that Donald's widow, aka Grace, would lead his men in defence. So she then succeeded him as chieftain and used this as her advantage to build her own empire. O'Malley then returned to her father's lands with those of Donald's men who remained loyal to her and made Clare Island her stronghold. Starting with 3 galleys, she embarked on a career of piracy on the high seas. So basically, she's married up.
Yeah.
And is now reaping the benefits.
I think it's also, it's very interesting. Like, it obviously says a lot about her and who she was as a woman and a pirate, that she was able to kind of take her dead husband's men and that they believed in her enough to be like, yeah, fair play, we'll go with you.
Yeah, definitely. And I also think it's really interesting that like the image of like the widow throughout history is like the grieving, like they wear black for a whole year sort of thing. And she's like, oh, I'll take all your lands and I'll also like fight.
Yeah,
like,
I've actually been waiting for this day for several years.
I planned this.
I'm more than ready for it.
Yeah. With a taste for the chieftain lifestyle, Grace decides to remarry another Irish chieftain. This one was called Richard the Iron Burke, which was basically, it was a nickname for Iron Dick.
Literally Dick the Iron Burke. That's powerful.
It is.
That's
powerful.
A much better pirate name than her last husband.
So it is.
She's already like trading upwards.
In more ways than one. However, I think apparently it meant it was in relation to, well, obviously he was called Richard, so that's where we're getting the dick from. There's not sort of like some weird euphemism going on there, although who knows. And he apparently had loads of iron deposits on his hands because he was fighting all the time.
Wow.
With iron. Yeah.
It's very masculine.
Very masculine. Iron Dick Burke, a member of the powerful MacWilliam family, made a perfect political match. It's believed that the strategic strength of his castle, Rockfleet, was a motivating factor for the shrewd pirate queen. Except this time, she didn't want to wait for the new husband to die, and she entered into something called a trial marriage. Now, these were actually common in Ireland at the time and allowed either party to withdraw after a year. And when 12 months had elapsed, O'Malley and her men locked Iron Dick, her husband, out of Rockfleet and demanded a divorce with the words, I dismiss you.
That's very, I like the idea of like a trial marriage. It's giving Married at First Sight, pirate edition.
Yeah. I also love that she used his own men to lock him out of his own castle.
And I just love the image of her having these old men that she won from her first marriage, and they're sticking through her,
yeah,
like through all of her future marriages. And I think that's really
wonderful. And it's, I think you said it earlier, like it's really interesting that all these people decided to follow her. Like she must have just had like so much like magnetism. People were just like,
because I feel like as much as I'm believing that Grace is like really strong and really formidable, like if it's a group of guys, they could totally overpower her,
yeah,
and just be like, go away girl,
we're staying with Iron Dick.
Yeah, we're going to start our own crew.
Yeah.
Go away. We don't like you anymore.
Yeah. And also, like, you're a woman. Sorry, it's not your place.
Like, no one would judge them for it in that time. But I think it's really nice that it's like Snow White and the 7 Dwarfs.
Yeah.
But Grace O'Malley and her pirate guys.
Pirate gang. So, despite Grace dismissing Iron Dick, the pair did reconcile and remained together for almost 20 years. Aww. until he then dies, and then she takes all his castles and his boats again.
Wow, old habits.
We're seeing a pattern. So according to historical records of the time, Grace's ships were substantial and could carry around 200 men. They had been designed similarly to a Viking longship, which made them maneuverable, fast, and able to venture close to the coastline. Grace would use this ability to plunder coastal towns and holdings for whatever she could find. In Ireland at the time, cattle farming was all the rage, so she would often carry out cattle raids. And she also introduced a new type of piracy, so she's an entrepreneur, which was toll-taking at sea for safe passage. So her clan began to toll-take every boat that they could, which travelled through her family's waters. And as it was a busy route, with boats coming up from Spain towards Ulster and Scotland, she was making a pretty penny.
That's so she was basically, any ship that went past her, she was like, cough up.
Yeah, so not only is she setting up prenups,
She's becoming setting up the wallet inspector like road tax, the seas. That's mad.
But for the sea. As well as obviously illegal tactics, she also did have some genuine trade relationships, most significantly in Spain, where she exchanged goods. So she's got her fingers in a lot of pies.
Yeah.
She's a busy girl. She had become a successful businesswoman, part mercenary, part pirate, in her own right, and rumours of her danger and success began to be carried with the waves. One rumour in oral history is that one day on the sea, she birthed a son. A day later, her ship was attacked by North African pirates. It's said that Grace put down her baby, stormed the deck, flung open the cabin door, and fired her musket at the enemy until they were all defeated. A day after giving birth.
Good for her. You can't interrupt nap time. No. You've got to get the sleep schedule going. It's otherwise, so you can never get it back.
I also feel like it's a really extreme version of, you know, that quote where it's like, whatever men can do, I can do bleeding. Like, yeah. When women like menstruate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
and this
yeah.
is like, whatever men, male pirates can do, I can do a day after birth.
Yeah, exactly. You would not get me on a boat the day after birth. No. You would not see me for a year after I give birth.
The O'Malley clan's motto was powerful by land and by sea, and it was an accurate description of Grace herself. And she was actually so famous, she reached the attention of Queen Elizabeth I, as basically Grace was causing problems for English trade routes. Plus, at the time, England was actually trying to occupy Ireland. No offence to England, but you guys do that a lot.
Yeah, we did used to do a lot of that.
Yeah, which obviously the Irish weren't too keen on. So to the English, O'Malley was a direct threat. And there was one man in particular who had become her nemesis, Sir Richard Bingham.
You've got to have a nemesis. I've always said it.
It's so true. Richard Bingham was the Lord President of Connacht, one of Ireland's four provinces in which County Mayo sat, and claimed that O'Malley was
nurse to all rebellions in the province for this 40 years.
A couple years later, the nemesis plot really begins to thicken when O'Malley's eldest son, Owen, is killed at the hand of Bingham's brother.
It's top nemesising.
It's top nemesising. It's heating up. Heartbroken and grieving, O'Malley leads an attack against Bingham, but is lured into a trap and captured. But she then escapes, and basically, Bingham and O'Malley start to commit to years of violence against each other, fighting, burning each other's fleets, etc., etc. It's a real nemesis plot.
Good for them. It's the spite will carry them through.
Definitely. Tired and fed up with Bingham, as you would be, Grace decides to go over his head and writes directly to Queen Elizabeth, a 1586 version of telling mum, so to speak.
She CC'd in his boss.
She did. And I love that. I love a bit of pettiness.
Don't you just?
I do. It's like when you're at work and you do that pass ag email, yeah. And you're like, it was worth it.
To whom it may concern.
Yeah. As per my below email, that's my favourite one. In the letter, she tells her side of the story and lays the blame entirely on Bingham. She basically states to Queen Elizabeth that she had no choice but to defend her family and land from the evil Mr. Bingham. In retaliation, Bingham captures another one of O'Malley's sons. And it just gets pettier and pettier, basically.
It's a good thing she's got enough sons to go around, really, isn't it?
It really is, because Bingham would be out of moves.
Exactly.
And I just feel like Bingham, be creative.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, you've already killed one son. Like, yeah. You need to move, like, you need to go after something else.
I totally agree. And in order to negotiate the life and freedom of her son, O'Malley then agrees to go and meet with Queen Elizabeth in Greenwich, 1593. It's fair to say that Grace makes it as awkward as possible, refusing to be seen as any lesser than Elizabeth, which is a pretty bold move, I'd say. Grace refuses to bow to Queen Elizabeth.
Bold.
Yeah, lordy, lordy. She conceals a dagger and also blows her nose and throws the used handkerchief into the fire. But amazingly, this approach actually worked, and it's reported that Elizabeth felt great kinship with Grace, a fellow female leader in a male-dominated world.
It's women supporting women. Yeah, we love to see it.
We do. Much to Bingham's dismay, Elizabeth allows Grace to return to her ways, basically, and introduces a thing called maintenance by land and sea, which was an authorised form of piracy, allowing O'Malley to regroup and regrow after years of fighting Bingham. Moreover, she is given power to be the chieftain of County Mayo, a title that no woman had ever held before, and she frees her son.
Great stuff. Although I would say, if I was a pirate and the Queen was like, I'm giving you permission to do this piracy, it would probably ruin it a little bit.
Yeah.
For me, because then you lose the kind of like, oh, I'm doing a really bad, naughty thing.
Yeah.
Whereas someone's like, you go ahead and do it. I'd be like, oh, I don't want to do it anymore now.
Yeah, I know what you mean, because she's not like a pirate anymore. She's
like the Queen.
Legal.
Yeah, she's like a mate of the Queen.
Yeah. I know, I get you. And also, I can kind of imagine that like Grace has kind of been a chieftain in her own right. Like, okay,
yeah, she's like, I don't need you to tell me that I can do that. I've been doing it anyway.
I can imagine. Like, Elizabeth did think of herself as above her because, like, she was obviously, like,
the Queen
of England. And I think she was probably thinking she was, like, bestowing all these things on her. And Grace was probably just like, this is actually not that much for me, hon, but fine.
And I guess also from the point of view of, like, top nemesising, like, the enemy of my enemy is my friend type of thing.
Yeah.
So, like, if you're wanting to piss off Mr. Bingham.
Yeah. This is the
this
way.
This is perfect.
I do love the image of Bingham being in that room, just like
seething,
arms crossed, just like, red in the
why
face.
Iata.
So O'Malley continues at sea way into her 60s. But the new century did bring lots of change to piracy and change to Ireland. And the Gaelic Irish ways of life begins to crumble. And so too does Grace. And in 1603, Grace O'Malley dies, and she also dies the same year as Elizabeth, which is very poetic.
That is very poetic. That's quite nice.
Yeah.
As like as bad as it is to say something's nice about two people dying, it's quite a nice symmetry.
It's weird that like they kind of obviously have very different lives or whatever, but it's quite like a weird like interchange in history, I think.
Yeah. And also they're kind of both in their own different ways. That's probably why like Elizabeth bestowed all that stuff upon her, because she was like, even though we're complete opposites, I see a lot of my stuff through you, because I can't imagine it's easy to be the Queen of England as a woman.
No, definitely. You don't really hear stories about that of women in history. It's often like pitting women against each other sort of thing, or they're just not really there at all.
But it's then quite a recent thing to be hearing about kind of female world leaders working together.
Yeah, which is quite refreshing. I just really enjoyed the story of Grace.
Yeah, I have real great images of just a woman on a ship in those kind of like iconic scenes you see in movies. On the seven seas, living her best life.
Yeah, baby in one arm, musket in the other.
Yeah, exactly.
Icon.
You truly can
cattle.
Have it all.
You truly can. You've been listening to History Gap with me, Georgia McAndrew.
And me, Molly Goodfellow. If you've enjoyed today's episode, don't forget you can like and subscribe. And if you can, leave us a little review.
And keep an eye on our socials, at History Gap on Instagram and TikTok, and at History Gap Pod on Twitter.
See you next time.
See you next time. Bye.